Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Press X, The Geek Show's dedicated video games podcast. We cover all sorts of games, from first-person shooters to JRPGs and every wibbly thing in between. So
that was such a boring intro.
All right, I'll do it again then.
No, don't do it again. It's just like you sort of. It's like where's the real Robin Nat? I don't believe that was you. I believe that was a script you read. Where's the real Rob? Where's the real person?
Talk with the excitement of the face you did when your PS4 came, Rob.
Hello there! Welcome to Press X!
Oh, you think I'm keeping that in there? All the dogs of the podcasting universe would be so upset with me. Anyhow, like you said, it's Press X, and we've got another bevy of games to catch up with. Some current, some weird, some not so current. But we've got six to go through. An awful lot of first-person shooters in that.
Since the first game I'll be doing is about fast cars, should I lead the way?
It is the anomaly.
It is the anomalous one.
I'm quite terrible at it.
It's the odd one, so I think it should go first, yeah.
This isn't a first-person shooter. This is quite different. This is this year's World Rally Championship, or WRC6, as they've called itself for quite a number of years now. This is the equivalent to your Colin McRae Dirt that I understand at the minute.
Cool.
It was just called Dirt, though, wasn't it? I think it was Travis Pastrani. I think that was one of those douches who basically do everything with like monster products all over them.
Mm. Yeah.
World Rally Championship, it's developed by, if I'm pronouncing this right, Rob, is it Kylo Ton?
Kylo Ren?
Ben Interactive.
Oh, right. I thought you were trying to say Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren's doing video games.
But yeah, this is, to me, upon playing it, it's your more arcadey, despite it being the official game of your rally-based simulation. I managed to get the grips with the career mode, which starts off with a basic tutorial track,
okay.
where it basically just guides you through the first track, teaches the controls, that type of thing. And then you give in a little short driving test, and then it chooses a difficulty for you. So
All right.
It's very user-friendly.
Okay.
However, this is where the user-friendly element to it stops. I think the World Rally Championship, with it being a licensed game, it's meant for rally fans or fans of rally games.
Yeah.
For example, you've got all the different numbers and letters that for all the corners that you get.
Yeah.
That the man speaks to you in your ear.
Yeah, when they go right, or left, or hard right.
And for me, you'll all laugh at this one. The last rally game I played was Colin McRae Rally on the PlayStation 1, which was very, very basic.
Well, actually, it was basic, but it was still fun.
Well, on that one, this will be a great comparison, this. You basically got your basic, this is going to be a slight turn, put your brake on type of thing.
Yeah.
On this one, you have, for example, right at number 6, and it's got like a little yellow symbol on it.
Yeah.
So I have to do my research before I actually continue the game to know what they mean.
Basically, I understand what they mean. They're just talking about the actual key points of a specific course, with each turn being numbered. You know there's a turn coming because they're calling out a number and they're telling you which direction to turn in.
But anyway, the gameplay I thought was really fun. The courses vary from really short to extremely long. I mean, I think one level took me about 20, 25 minutes to clear.
Really?
So they do get quite long. However, the gameplay I thought was really fun. The only thing that lets it down, apart from the complexity of it, is the graphics and what you'd expect for a new next-gen or this-gen game. It's more like I'm playing something from the 360 type.
Really?
But apart from that, I thought it was a really fun game. You don't have to For example, you don't have to take breaks if your tyres are worn out. What they'll do is, if you needed to, you have your colours around your wheels, you know, like your traditional racing games.
Yeah.
And if you need to replace a tyre, it would just literally, if you chose to, take the time, add 30 seconds onto your end time. So it's very arcadey, but that adds to the fun of it, I think.
Yeah.
Keeps the pace. It's a very fast game, which I enjoyed.
All right. And how's it when it comes to handling the car? What's the, you know, when you're driving the car and the steering, what's that like?
The steering itself, I want to, it's not the easiest, but technically it's a rally game. So if it was extremely easy, it's not going to be very good. I think the trick of it, though, is do you go around the course very carefully and brake? If you do, then it's going to be really easy for you to do.
Yeah.
Or do you go as fast as you can and literally handbrake around all the corners? I would say if you do that, it's very fun, but you're gonna need a really long time to get the terms of it.
Yeah, because my usual style with whenever I play a rally game is, you know, slide turns around every corner as many times as I can.
No brake, crash into the barrier.
Yeah, slide around every corner. You know,
then by the time you get to the end, you've added 40 minutes onto your time.
Yeah, but that's only if you don't really play rally games or games where sliding around corners is important, you know? Mm. You know, the first game I ever played where I had to slide around the corner was Daytona at the arcades.
Mm.
You know, the one that eventually came out on the Sega Saturn?
I think so.
Yeah, that was the first game.
The old ones like that.
Yeah, the old ones. That was the first game I ever played where I had to slide around the corner. I spent a fortune on that game getting good at it. And after that, I never look back. You know, any game that has a slide that allows you to slide around corners, I'm there. Sega Rally Championship, the original Sega Rally Championship. That's why I poured pounds into that one as well. But I mean, did you play this with a controller or with a actual wheel?
I played it with the controller. It does have a slight, I'd say, point in a direction of using a wheel. I think you'll have a much more enjoyment out of it with a wheel.
All right,
it'll probably be a lot easier. I'll admit.
Yeah, these games tend to be better when you use a wheel.
But I have to say, it's a really fun game. The career mode itself, it's not very extensive. You go through your four seasons of your rally championship with all the official licenses. You sign your contracts with a choice of three or four different sponsors and teams, and you basically go through the full championship. But menu-wise, it's very minimal, so it is very gameplay-based. Driving a lot of the time. So if you like that type of thing and you don't like your menu-to-menu slow type of gameplay, you'll love this, definitely.
So is this one, as you said earlier, is this then just kind of a pure form of what we would define as servicing fans of rally?
Yes. Yes and no. I think the main audience that will take it up is your rally fans.
Yeah.
I do think your more casual fans would go for an alternative where it might just not be too official and, for example, Dirt or something like that.
So is it more like games like Grid then, where it's a lot more arcade racer than tech? Well, I define them as arcade racers and technical racers. So arcade racers are things like Grid, whereas technical races are things like Formula One. So would you say this was an arcade racer or a technical racer?
It depends on your difficulty. I would say technical if you like everything on manual, which is what a lot of people that will buy the game probably would.
All right.
You can literally put all the assistance on and the difficulty down, so it feels more of an arcade racer.
Okay.
The repairs part of it is very arcadey, where it'll just add time to the end rather than stop you.
So it's not like the reverse of the, you know, the Street Fighter minigame where you have to trash the car. It's not the reverse of that, is it? Where you have to just bash the button.
But where the car tries to trash Ryu.
No. The way you have to bash the button in the pit crew, repair the car as quick as possible.
Because I would pay to see a car beat up Ryu or Ken or any of those. Not Honda, though. I like Honda.
Yeah, Honda's great.
But anyway, I do recommend that one.
All right.
It's a very fun game for what I played. And, you'll get something out of it if you like your rally games.
Cool. Me next, then. And should I go with the... I'll let you guys pick. Do I go with frustrating but ultimately kind of satisfying, or should I go with just downright good?
Well, they're both JRPGs, so six of one, half a dozen of the other, you know.
Okay, well, tell you what, we'll go with frustrating but ultimately satisfying first, then. And frustrating but ultimately satisfying is not the name of a game. It is actually my emotions about this game. The game itself is called The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel 2, which is the sequel to The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel, from 2013, if I remember rightly. I think it was released in the UK.
That is a terrible title.
Yeah. I think it was released in the UK in 2014. So, anyway.
It's like they went to the fantasy section of the local secondhand bookshop and just picked the one with the worst 1970s poopy cover.
Yeah.
And then let's make a game about that picture, yeah.
Right, okay.
Well, just ignore what I just said then.
Sorry, I was looking for something, so I didn't actually hear what you said.
You douche. So, you're 70s sci-fi then?
Kind of. It's weirdly enough, there's a distinct kind of, well, I wouldn't say 70s vibe, but there's definitely some funky bits in there. And so, this is a direct sequel to Trails of Cold Steel. And when I say direct sequel, I mean quite literally, if you finished Trails of Cold Steel, you can take your save game and start this game. The game picks up right after the end of the events of Trails of Cold Steel. And bit of a spoiler here, but Trails of Cold Steel ends in a big fight, big invasion, and the main character, Rene Schwarzer, he has got his mech, the Ashen Knight Valimar, something like that, and you know, he's basically being taken out of the fight against his will. His friends are all standing there at the academy at Thor's Military Academy, which is being invaded by an enemy force. They're all defending him when he succumbed to the enemy mech, and then he escaped and left his friends behind, but that was against his will, so he's feeling bitter about it. The game starts off with Rene Schwarzer waking up in a wasteland in the north of the continent, near his hometown, surprisingly enough. The Ashen Knight is there. It's running on low power. It's burned out loads of its juice to try and save him. And his only companion is a talking cat called Celine. He doesn't know why the cat is suddenly talking. That will be explained later.
He's gone mad.
So anyway, Rene has to make it down the mountain and...
I'm sorry.
No. That's not the part that you go mad. That's coming. I'll explain. Oh. Right?
Okay.
So anyway, Rene has to go down the mountain. This is all the introduction, so I'm not spoiling anything in the game, right? He has to go down the mountain, and as he's going down the mountain, he finds out that this is the place where his master used to train him, and so he knows he's near his hometown. So they decide to go down the mountain even further, and then, all of a sudden, oh, boss battle! And as he's fighting and fighting and fighting, eventually, he runs out of energy. The boss is about to kill him, and then he's saved by one of his friends and his adopted sister. Eventually he wakes up in his bed at his hometown, meets his parents, has to go through the town, talking to people, helping people, and the quest begins to go back across the continent, reunite with his friends, and see what can be done about the war, because they still don't know what's going on. It all gets wibbly after that. So there's your intro. And what a frustrating intro it is. Right. From the get-go...
On that point. I think... is this a Japanese RPG?
Yes.
I think this is very symbolic of what's happened to the Japanese RPG. Because looking at the Western RPG, and they've opened up the storytelling a lot more. It doesn't just plonk you in this situation and go, there you go, do what you want.
This is true.
And it opens up, and it's much shorter. It's broken up. There's like things like prologues where it has like a part of the game where you play some, and it uses cutscenes and the rest of it.
Yeah,
it works very well. I mean, look at like Fallout or Skyrim or whatever. They're doing it a different way entirely, where they let you control your character through it. And you get the Japanese stuff where it just plonks you on scrunt for screen and says, "All right, shut up for a few hours. I'm going to tell you some stuff."
Yeah,
that actually is a great point.
That is. It's kind of one of the big reasons why the JRPG is basically dying.
Well,
and why this title that was released today as we record this,
yeah,
had to go very different with it. And I don't know where this game falls within. It's just a point that I wanted to say and a point that I wanted to get off my chest.
Yeah, well, it's a point that I wanted to get off my chest as well, but you kind of preempted me on that because I was about
Yay!
To... But it doesn't matter because I'm still going to rant. My bile is that much about this game, about the opening bit of this game, right? There are certain things when it comes to game development, right, that you should not overlook. Number one, this is the sequel to the first game. So if you're playing this game, the chances are you've played the original game.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Mm.
So then, when you start this game, it gives you the option to actually go over the events of the previous game from the menu, which I did, right? Just to refresh my memory. And then I go into the game, and the game starts, and there's this long-ass narrative bit where Rian Schwarzer is talking about the events of the Academy and his hopes and dreams. And, you know, he's like this starry-eyed teenage girl, you know, talking about her hopes and dreams. And
he's
it's
like
going
a starry-eyed teenage girl. That's an amazing effect.
Yeah. Thing is, he's going over the events of the previous game. And I'm thinking, and I'm basically hitting every button on the controller. Because one of the things of game development is if you're going to put a cutscene in there, give me the ability to skip the goddamn cutscene. Right.
You realise, though, JRPGs usually don't let you until after you've finished the game.
No.
Just so you're sitting watching.
A lot of the JRPGs I've played actually do give you the ability to skip a cutscene, right?
Ah.
A lot of them do. This
a lot
one
of them don't.
There are just as many that don't, but a lot of them do, right? The Tales franchise, for example, you can skip cutscenes in that, right? This one doesn't give you the ability to skip cutscenes. And so I was left with this recap of events from the previous game, which I had literally just read minutes before, but now was being narrated to me because apparently I'm a complete and utter, you know, melon who can't actually read.
We know that, Rob, but, you know, the game might not, you know.
So anyway, I'm getting annoyed, right? I'm getting annoyed because it feels like the game is actually patronizing me at this point by telling me stuff I've literally just read.
Does it use it in small words so you can understand?
No, it just says it and doesn't give me the ability to skip. And then it goes into Rian waking up and going over the events. Celine basically trying to explain to Rian that the Ashen Knight has something that's like a consciousness, so it went out of its way to save his life. And Rian's going, I have to get back to my friends, blah, blah, blah. But he's been out cold for about a month. Which then brought me to my next point. If he's been out cold for about a month on a mountainside...
Yeah.
Do you want to do the math? How long can someone survive in exposed on the side of a mountain?
Well, it's a Japanese game, so I imagine he's got, like, a weird costume. He's got shorts on, he's got T-shirts on, he's got mad hair, so... Forever. But you just go... a little bit, and he'd be fine.
Yeah. So,
or you'll have one of those magical potions...
Yeah.
Somewhere that you can do everything.
So anyway, Rian is being, you know, I can kind of understand his character. For him, the moment has just happened. He's got to get back. But when he finds out that it's been like a month or 2 months since the end of the fight, he calms down a little, but he still won't talk to the cat. And I'm thinking, okay, the cat is obviously talking to you. Why aren't you talking to the cat? You know, the cat is asking you valid questions. Why aren't you responding?
Are you going in slightly insane now? Because I know it's a game and obviously this is what happens in it. But just the way you're describing it, it sounds like you've maybe went a little bit insane.
No, the reason why I was feeling like that, right, the reason why I was thinking like that was because I was still annoyed at the introduction, right? But that wasn't the thing that made me want to find whoever did the game design for this and the development for this and punch them in the balls. That bit was coming up. That bit was coming up, right? So anyway, as you progress down the mountain, you eventually come to the boss battle I mentioned, right? And this is the bit that I found really, really annoying. So you have to fight this magical knight, big boss, and I'm actually kicking its ass. I am basically taking it down. I am laying the smack down on this thing, right? Literally laying the smack down on this thing. And apparently I'm not supposed to be able to because the game has decided I'm not allowed to win this fight, even though I'm clearly winning this fight, right?
That's a thing that's like, prevalent in a lot of games. You know, it's not just this. Don't just make single this one out. Where you're better at the game than the game thinks you should be, or you've leveled up more than the game thinks you should.
Yeah.
But it still has this little out, so whatever happens, you always lose.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. I wish games had stopped doing it.
Yeah, it annoyed the hell out of me, because I was about to win, and then all of a sudden the game stopped, and my character collapses. Oh, he's almost out of health. He's going to die. The sword is coming down for the magical knight. I'm like, that's not how this fight went. You're lying now, game. You're lying to me now.
Oh dear.
only for my character, Reen Schwarzer, to be saved by his adopted sister and a couple of other friends and taken back to his hometown when he's unconscious. I'm like, I had full health. How the hell am I unconscious?
Maybe you fell asleep after, you know, your food and you didn't realise what happened. I don't know.
But now you understand why the... Sorry, you were saying, Andy?
It wouldn't be that dramatic of a story if you were that good at the beginning.
But now you understand my frustration, right? See,
of course,
The problem I have is, as the game progresses, you have to go out into the world, into the wider world, and the areas to go to are a lot... There are a lot more areas to go to. The maps are a lot bigger than the original Trails of Cold Steel. The combat mechanics are pretty much the same. You have the tactical link system from the first game, and you can equip items and various things like that. You basically have these, you can learn abilities and get stat boosts and stuff like that using this orb system that they've got, which is an interesting system, I'll be honest. And that's all well and good. There is a bit dungeon crawling as you grind to level up, but that's fairly easy. You know, the monsters aren't really that hard during the initial part of the game. And you have to go out into the world and find all the members of Class 7, which was your class in the school. You were a special class that was created specifically for training really, really top-quality people, you know, the elites of the elite kind of thing. So you go out to find the rest of Class 7 who've been scattered all across the world after the end of Trails of Cold Steel. And that's all well and good, right? There are other things going on, political machinations, politics, war, everything like that. There's the Crimson God Knight Testarossa and the, you know, who's been awakened by a character called Cayenne. I wanted to know if her surname was Pepper. And
bad.
I wanted to know if his surname was Pepper. Sorry, it's a guy.
He's not a doctor.
Oh, that
makes
it all better, yeah.
No, he's not a doctor. He's not a doctor. He is not Dr. Cayenne Pepper.
Mr. Trickler.
You know, but because the Crimson God Knight Testarossa has been summoned, it marks the end of Vermilion, you know, and so, yeah, they've basically got to try and seal the end of Vermilion at the end of the game, and I'm just kind of, yeah, okay, yeah, it's been exciting. But there's been boring parts as well, and the boring parts are always, fundamentally, the cutscenes, right? There are no talking heads bits in this game, thankfully, because I'm sick of the talking heads games. They would normally annoy me, but there are exceptions to that rule. This, thankfully, isn't a talking heads game, but the graphics really aren't that great. They're kind of PS2 level graphics, you know, late stage PS2 where they were really starting to push the graphics, but still kind of PS2 graphics.
It's like God of War level, original one.
Yeah, well, yeah, kind of original level God of War. And that, it's kind of, you know, when they take the anime style but turn it into a 3D model.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like that. The graphics are better than the original Trails of Cold Steel, because the graphics in that one were, frankly, quite shocking. But the problem with this game is fundamentally the cutscenes. When you've played the original Trails of Cold Steel, see, this is again coming back to the whole game design, game development. If I've played the original Trails of Cold Steel, there are certain things that I shouldn't need to do in the sequel, right? Number one, have that recap of events in the original game, because it's clear that I've played the original game because I've loaded a save game, you know, my clearance save game of the original game, yeah? So I shouldn't need a recap of the first game, should I? And there's lots of little examples of this kind of oversight throughout the game, which kind of spoil the overall effect of the game. That and the fact that there's too much dungeon crawling for not enough level gain. You really have to grind a lot in order to gain levels in this game.
Yeah.
And that, again, is a detriment to the game because it's supposed to be an action game. It's supposed to be an RPG game where you actually go out and fight in a war, right? Or try and save the world. You remember Valkyria Chronicles?
Yeah. That was a frustrating game, but I don't think it deserved the universal praise it got, but it was a good game.
Yeah, but you know how the action in Valkyria Chronicles was a lot more immediate?
Yeah, it was turn-based, but it somehow managed to be immediate all the same.
Yeah, well, the problem with Trails of Cold Steel 2 and Trails of Cold Steel is that even though when you get into combat, it's actually quite immediate, but it's the getting to the combat. I've been through...
Is it like World of Final Fantasy where it has like this time bar and you've literally got to fast-forward it because it takes too long otherwise?
No, it's not like that. It's just basically finding the critters to actually fight so you can level up, right?
Oh, okay.
I ended up having to go from one area to... I'd basically clear an area, have to leave it, come back in and then kill everything again, then go out and come in, go out, come in, go out, come in, you know? And then when I was done, shake it all about and then do the hokey-corky.
And shake it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the main problem. Those are the main problems with this game, fundamentally. It just, the grinding is just too repetitive. It's too repetitive.
Well,
and
that's the whole point of grinding, but okay.
The thing is, I don't mind grinding in RPGs normally.
Okay. Right. That's Legend of Galactic Heroes, is it? I'm not making
Making crap up again. But yeah, anyway, yeah. As I was saying, just to wrap this up, right? If you play the first game, it's worth playing the second game, but mainly to continue the story, because there is a third game. I'm not sure when that's coming out, but it has been announced that there is a third game, a third installment in the series. So I'll definitely be playing it, and I'm hoping that they will improve on a variety of aspects and give it actual skippable cutscenes. This game, though, is mainly aimed at people who played and enjoyed the first game. And you'll really only get it if you've played and enjoyed the first game. That's The Legend of Heroes: Trails of Cold Steel 2.
I'm going to go next, and it's going to be quick because I can get to the point.
Yeah, but I was frustrated. The next one will be shorter and snappier.
This one it's end of the year, which means the Christmas games are in. The games which are trying to they've got the big marketing budgets. Classically, the one that's had the biggest budget of all has been Call of Duty. Especially the Infinity Ward ones. There's been a lot of furore about their release of the the Super Collection of Modern Warfare, which is a Stone Cold classic. I don't care, but whatever came after it, that one was a Stone Cold classic.
Yeah.
But this one is Infinity Warfare. And I will say, I really,
Infinity
really like
Infinity Warfare
War
or Infinite Warfare?
Infinite.
You said Infinity Warfare.
Did I? I might have been thinking of something else.
I think you were Infinity Ward.
Yeah. Maybe I'm mashing them out together, but yeah, there's Infinite Warfare, and then he did it again. But I got to stand up for Advanced Warfare. I thought Advanced Warfare was a really underrated, well-designed game, which used its slight futurized world to brilliant effect. And this one, I don't know whether it's just come at the wrong time, but I feel like there's this sea change in the first-person shooter market, which is moving away from the status quo that Infinity Ward and the Call of Duty franchise instigated, where it's all cover shooters, it's all very serious, it's like clear a zone, move to the next bit of cover, move to the next zone, next bit of cover, move to the next zone, next bit of cover.
Yeah.
Because with games like Doom, which is possibly the best shooter of the year, well, no, hands down the best shooter of the year, and Titanfall, which I'll talk about in a little bit, the shooter has gone back to that 90s idea of being fast, of being mobile.
Okay.
And this is, when you're sort of Earthbound, I think it's very, well, it's worn out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like, take away the sci-fi, and it feels like I'm playing the same game that I played on the PlayStation 3, what, about 10 years ago or something?
I mean, is it more like Advanced Warfare? Because
it's like Advanced Warfare, but more futuristic, because you've got things like powers where you can take control of robots and then make it self-destruct and stuff like that, and you can call in airstrikes, which are very impressive, and see through walls like that. Yeah. So, Earthbound, it's very decent, but it's also too familiar. And I think they were trying to sort of change the spot a little bit, Infinity Ward. But the internet has said, no, no, you can't do that. You've got to be militarized, World War II or whatever, modern era shooter. So this is very much a halfway house. It's them trying to change the spots while keeping the gameplay largely the same.
That's not really going to work well, is it?
Yeah, you can't. It's one step forward, one step back. You're not really doing anything. But I think the area which they really should go for, and it opened a little bit of a nostalgia door for me, which I never knew existed, like, at all. I never knew I had a fondness for this sort of thing, is the flying sections.
Uh-huh.
The flying sections, the ships are really nippy. The scenes are very well choreographed. And just the way the mechanics work, the different weapons you have, your ability to move around, it's so good. To put it in the most basic way possible.
Well,
and so refreshing and so new and so... Not new, but it's coming back to an era of games which is just... basically died off.
So is it
when I first saw this...
Go on, Andy, you first.
When I first saw this, that they went all futuristically and space wars and stuff like that, it just got me a Halo feeling. Does it come across as anything like that?
Well, for me, when I looked at it, when I first saw what this was going to be, my first thought was, are they laying down the throwing down a challenge to DICE and Battlefront?
No, well, maybe a little, but the flying sections are very Battlefront, I will say that.
Yeah.
And it just made me want to play that sort of game again. So, you know, the space shooter.
Yeah. Well, not even the space shooter. I mean, stuff like Afterburner.
Oh, whatever, you know, something where you're Ace Combat. Or yeah. If that was a little more accessible and not super hardcore.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, you know. That's opened the door there that I forgot existed, and that's the true triumph of this game, I think.
Well, we don't really see that many games of that type.
It's just ripe. It's totally ripe for somebody to just step in and go, mine, we're having that, we're going to do that.
Well,
and because that's basically what Infinity Warfare did the first time around. Because around the time of Modern Warfare, it was not a popular franchise or a popular... idea of the first person shooter, it was kind of just there.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think because they're doing stuff with VR, and I think CCP have ideas like that for Eve Valkyrie.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I've heard the massive budget, what was it called? Star Citizen.
Yeah.
Is melding together the two of them in the biggest budget way possible.
Yeah, but Star Citizen is still kind of. Yeah, I don't have a computer powerful enough yet.
I don't think many people do, to be honest. But my point is, you know, the stuff which they are genuinely innovating on is brilliant.
Yeah.
But everything else just sadly reeks of compromise.
I've heard the story was a little bit shoddy as well, this whole...
Well, the story is basically there's a bunch... Humanity goes out and colonises the stars, and the humanity that colonises the stars doesn't like being dictated to by Earth, so they invade Earth.
Yeah.
Led by Jon Snow from Game of Thrones. That's yeah.
Well, when I read the story, my first reaction was, haven't you just nicked the story from Gundam?
Whether it has or it hasn't. But, yeah, that's... Infinite Warfare. Keep on doing it. This is like that time when I couldn't say Samurai Warriors.
Yes. Samurai.
Samurai Warriors. I don't have a lisp or anything like that. I'm saying Samurai. Samurai Warriors. Samurai. Not that I'm mocking anybody who has a lisp, there, of course. It's just such a weird thing. But yeah, like I say, when it's doing new stuff, I think Infinite Warfare is outstanding. But yeah. Generally, it's just so compromised. And that's its biggest tragedy.
Cool. So, Andy? Okay.
On a totally different stance from Infinite Warfare is EA's... I think I'm correct in that. Is it EA?
Yeah.
EA's take on the war first-person shooter genre is Battlefield 1, which is not to be confused with the first Battlefield game.
Okay.
It's Battlefield 1 in the same way that it's Xbox One.
Yes. Well, not that it was made during World War One.
And not that there was a Battlefield 360.
But anyway, Battlefield seemed to have taken a 360 to go all the way back from World War Two to World War One.
Yes, the Great War.
To me, going into it,
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the idea first. The gameplay feels, and the game itself feels like the older Call of Duty games to me, because I grew up playing them. And I mean, not number four before then.
Are you talking about the original three Call of Duty games?
So, like, well, when it was, four. I think it was Big Red One was one of the games.
That was number two.
I can't remember any of the others.
Call of Duty 1, 2, and 3. The Big Red One was number two. I can't remember what number three was.
Number two was a separate... Big Red One was separate altogether from Call of Duty 2, though.
It was that era, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, this, to me, was the first Battlefield game that I've ever played, so you two will have to help me with this one.
Okay.
I just before you get into it, I have played Bad Company, and that was brilliant. I'll just stand up and say that.
I've played Battlefield 4 and Hardline, so...
Well, I played Battlefield 1.
Yeah?
You'll start somewhere.
Anyway, I'll start off with when I first loaded up this game, in the prologue, where it sees just your main battle at the end of the war, where you are basically, you just have to survive, well, last as long as you can against an oncoming wave of enemies.
Yeah.
And for example, if you died, it just pass you onto another soldier.
Yeah.
So like that, it's trying to get that idea of war isn't fun, and it gives you a proper name of somebody that died during the war as well, with the date.
Wow.
When you pass away.
That's kind of brutal.
So it's a very brutal game. The whole, from what I played through, through the first campaign of it, it is very brutal. I think it's as brutal as a war game can get, to be honest. But anyway, gameplay-wise, the first campaign, it's set into four campaigns. I think it's four or five campaigns.
Yeah.
And the first campaign is you are a new soldier called Danny Edwards. Danny Edwards, that's his name. And basically you are with you have your commander and one of your friends. And you're in what they call Black Bess, which is a tank.
Yeah.
Good. Because I could get messy.
I didn't realise it was the tank. I just knew one of my first objectives is to control Black Bess. And I'm thinking, what's Black Bess?
She runs the local resistance at the French bar, and she's not a best pleased about what's happening.
Anyway, it's during the World War One, little history lesson, tanks were what we had over the opposition. So it's heavily, from what I played, it's heavily surrounded around this technology that came across. And you have to go through the first mission in Black Bess and destroy these outposts. And it was very traditional first-person shooter, go to this point, capture. It was like a capture the flag as well in the main campaign. So the gameplay is very good. Anyway, the gameplay itself... if you take Call of Duty, and I'd say increase the difficulty, I think, as well.
So are you talking also, like, Medal of Honor type thing?
Yeah, but you still regenerate your health. They haven't gone back to old school, collect your health packs.
Ah, right, okay, yeah.
But anyway, you have to keep on leaving and returning to Black Bess, and you have both of your health bars, well, your health to look into, to look after.
So yours and the tanks.
So, for example, you have to change to, you have a wrench, and when Black Bess gets damaged and you're not in it, you'll have to go and repair Black Bess.
Does that involve hitting Black Bess with a wrench, or do you have to get out and start turning the wrench?
You have to actually hold the button and it turns the wrench while you're getting shot at, so it's a very strategic element to it.
Okay.
But there's three of you, and... Well, there's four of you at the beginning, but it ends up being three of you. But then they want you to get out of Black Bess and go and clear the area, make sure it's safe for the tank to go through. And then they want you to go back and repair Black Bess. It's like, why don't you just go out and get it, do it yourself? Because I'm all the way over here with a pistol, no machine gun.
Yeah.
But anyway, you find out that after your main goals of capturing these outposts, you have to... going to further into the enemy base, and you get basically ambushed in this big open field. Big open, I can't really describe it. It's like an open plane type of thing.
Yeah.
And they send about 3 or 4 tanks off after you, and then it's your job to, well, you start off with the pistol, and then to just get rid of them all while the tank backs you up. And I thought it was a really fun game. I think it's a really fun way to... Well, it's a really fun game. I really liked it compared to the older Call of Duty games.
Right.
And the amount of weapons there that you have to procure. You can get, for example, you've even got pressured mines you can lay on the floor. There's anti-vehicle cannon. But it adds a more strategic element to it because you can only hold a set... It'll get rid of your wrench if you want to pick up the rocket launcher, so you can't protect Black Best no more.
Okay.
So that is really good, and it really adds on to the agony of war as well when you lose some of your teammates. Well, not I shouldn't say teammates, should I? Squad mates.
Yeah.
Teammates is a completely different thing. But yeah, compared to Call of Duty, I have to compare it to Call of Duty. I really like the element where... It's just the environments are all destructible.
All right.
Literally every
they have been for a while, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hide behind the cover, for example, and then next thing you know, somebody's in a cannon firing a rocket at you, and your cover's gone.
Do they have that levolution thing that they had in Battlefield 4 where the terrain actually changes dependent on weather events and other things like that?
It does. It does change. I'm not actually sure it changes during the level. It does change level by level, obviously, but there are different scenarios where, for example, the second bit of the first campaign, it's a very misty, so your visibility's down, and you're sent by yourself while the tank's slowly behind you in a very dense fog or mist, unable to see these soldiers that are looking for you. So it adds... With the weather changes and the different scenarios that you put in, it adds that... It gets rid of the boredom of non-stop action.
Okay.
Which is usually what I'm not usually a fan of playing.
Yeah. All right, cool. So, back to Rob then?
Yeah, keeping it on the shooter theme. Titanfall 2 kind of prefaced it a little bit by suggesting that this one was the better of Infinite Warfare and, well, Titanfall 2, but there we go. Respawn did the original one on Xbox and PC only, and that was before I bought a PS4, and I was toying with the idea of going Xbox because it was just an idea. The whole idea of Titans, the whole idea of the wall jumps, the whole idea of that, just I found fascinating. A fascinating like divergence to what a normal first-person shooter should be.
Yeah.
And apparently they've cleaned out a lot of the flaws of that. They've given it a story mode, which isn't anything special. As a narrative is concerned, you basically start off as sort of a run-of-the-mill rifleman, and he's training to be a pilot, which are basically like the Navy SEALs or something. It's like something you want to really aspire to. It's like the cream of the crop, you know, the leader of the fleet or whatever you want to word it as. And as the game starts, you are training to be one of them, and the person who trains you dies, you're ambushed, and... You're left alone, barely alive, with the Titan called BT. And you've basically got to get from that place of being abandoned, half dead, and get back to the fleet and retaliate. Which isn't enough. It's nothing much, really. But I will say one thing. It has... Well, there's a level in Dishonored, which everybody is talking about, as one of the finest of the year, or whatever way you want to frame it, where you can be in both time frames at the same time.
Okay.
Titanfall's got one of them.
All right.
And it's really well designed and well played. But the one which is genuinely one of the best levels in a first person shooter I may have ever played is a level where you go through the factory and you have to jump through the level as houses are being built.
Okay.
And the change. At the end of the level, you're basically jumping through a house which is upside down and attached to the ceiling of a massive factory and warehouse.
That's pretty impressive.
And you slowly go through the level as it's slowly coming together. And I really, really like that. That's a level which I think will really stand the test of time. But the gameplay, I think, is brilliant. It's the mobility. The mobility is a key thing. Usually, you're quite static. I mean, for a long time, the whole idea of jumping in a first-person shooter was, whoa, no, Nelly, you can't go jumping. Even if he had legs, that'd be an impressive thing.
But then Doom changed all that.
Doom changed all that. You can double jump, you can be very mobile. And Titanfall has built on that by being even more mobile. The wall jumping changes the game into not just a shooter, but a platformer as well. And that level of variation is something which a first-person shooter just doesn't enjoy.
Yeah.
And it creates like a really interesting dynamic when it's an online shooter because, you know, you can't... There's no such thing as camping. Camping's dead.
Yeah.
Standing still is stupid. You've got to be as mobile as you possibly can be. Keep on moving, keep on jumping, keep on wall jumping, keep on active. Really, really good, really, really inventive, and it's just so invigorating, you know. You feel really energized doing it. Because, you know, the whole idea going back to Call of Duty, how you stand behind this bit of cover, shoot a bit, buck your head down, shoot a bit, buck your head down, everybody's dead, move to the next bit.
Yeah.
It's just so... I don't want to say it, but lifeless. And then you play something like this, and you're so fast, so energetic, so brilliant, so moving, keeping moving. It's just an entirely different kettle of fish, and I think it's nice. I really like it a great deal. The one thing is, there's a type of enemy in this, which is basically, you know, those things that run up to you
yeah.
and then explode, and you can't see them.
Yeah.
It's not exclusive to Titanfall by any means. It's in a lot of games. Mm. Them things. assholes.
There are assholes in every game.
Yeah. Alternatively, there is the Titans, which are interesting, you know, they're very mobile for what they are. And there's different distinctions. There's like the shotgun mode, there's the rocket launcher mode, sniper rifle mode, machine gun mode, flamethrower mode, and rocket launcher. And I think there was another one.
Yeah.
But when you get to a certain point, you haven't killed a certain amount of people, you engage sort of... for the Fury mode, whatever you want to call it, one of them, my favourite, has a sword, which is like a one-shot killer. And another one just launches like a barrage of rockets, so it looks like an anime series or something, of rockets that it throws about.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's not about its flaws, obviously. I mean, the crime of this game is the community isn't as big as it should be. This isn't as popular as it should be. And all that's not a problem with the game per se. And I'm so happy that EA have like cemented their stance of standing behind this because it deserves it.
Yeah,
it deserves to be popular because it's breathing life into a stagnant genre. I think this and Doom, but Doom's multiplayer wasn't anything of anything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned the Titans are quite mobile.
For what they are, they're not. Yeah. They don't double jump or anything. So
no, the thing that I was thinking was, you know, if they pushed it a little bit. Maybe we could see something along the lines of Armored Core or Zone of the Enders being used as a Titan in Titanfall in the future.
Yeah.
So the robot has exactly the same mobility as you. So basically it's like using a bigger version of you to jump off walls, but that collapses the building at the same time.
Potentially. But what I just really like this game. If it was any other year, this would be first-person shooter of the year, but because Doom is out.
Yeah.
And I cannot stress how fun Doom is. I mean, when you watch the trailers, you think, oh, it's disgusting. Look at all that violence. But when you're playing it, you're like, oh, it's disgusting. Look at all that violence. Amazing. If that didn't exist, oh, if it was a different year, this would be like the hands down the best first-person shooter of the year for my money because it's just so natural, so fun, and so full of personality. I mean, even the story mode, the banter that you have with a robot and the affection you feel for a robot. Basically, like the horse in Shadow of Colossus, but if the horse, gave as good as it got.
All right, so more like Robot and Frank then.
Yeah. Well, maybe. It's just like two buddies, you know. That's what it feels like by the end of it. But one's like a giant robot which you've developed the feelings for, and the other's like a kind of generic guy. But the banter they have between them, the back and forth, is really nice.
So it's Lethal Weapon now.
Yeah, a bit Lethal Weapon.
You're not too old for this.
I like this so much. So much.
Cool.
Just the wall jumping and the double jumping. It's just the wall running and the double jumping. I never knew how it could work in a first-person perspective, but it's so, so fun.
I mean, I had a try of this not too long ago. I had a try of Titanfall 2, and I found it really fluid.
It is. It's so natural.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
And you know my thoughts on first-person shooters, Rob. I don't say that about them.
Bubble, all the motion sickness shooting stuff.
Yeah.
So natural.
Excellent. So is it me to round the show off then?
Yeah, another one of your weird Japanese RPGs.
Yeah, but do you know what? This weird Japanese RPG that I have next is one that I actually think you'd like, right?
Ooh, them challenging words there, Rob.
Well, it's on the Vita, right? Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel is on the Vita and on the PS3. But this one is purely a Vita title, and it is called Yomawari Night Alone.
That's a familiar title.
And, right, the game starts off by sucker-punching you. It gives you the cute graphics, and you have a girl, you know, and she's walking her dog, Poro, and they're on the way home. And the girl finds something on the road, and she picks it up, and then the screen goes black, and you hear the sound of a car, and then the lights come on again, and you see she's holding the leash, and there's a trail of blood on the floor from the end of Poro's leash where the dog... from the end of Poro's leash where the dog should have been. Yeah. And it goes off into the side of the road, into the woods. And so the girl goes back home, and her older sister says, "Where's the dog?" And the little girl, she's trying to explain to her older sister that the dog got hit by a car, but it's all jumbled, so her older sister thinks that the dog has simply run off. So she sets out that evening to find the dog and tells her little sister to stay at home. So the little sister's waiting. And she's waiting, and she's waiting, and she's waiting, until it's total night, and she realizes that her sister's not coming back. She realizes that something's happened, and so she sets out to find her sister. But when she leaves the house, she realizes that the town and the forest that she knows so well are no longer the town and forest that are around her. They're the same, but they're different. And that's the beginning of Yomawari Night Alone, right? And from then on, you basically have to explore the town, explore the surroundings, activate shrines, and avoid the bad things that go bump in the night. And they do literally go bump in the night because you have a heartbeat monitor. And the closer you are to something, the faster your heartbeat gets, right? Yeah. But it also slows you down, you know? The fear effect also slows you down and makes it a little bit more difficult for you to control your character the closer you are to these things. And only by activating these sacred shrines or finding a place to hide or running away from them can you be safe, because you can't fight back. You're a little girl, right?
Hey, little girls can kick you in the shin very hard.
Yeah, little girls can kick you in the shin. But in order for it to kick you in the shin, you have to have shins.
Ah, so shinless monsters.
Yes. Not just shinless monsters. You can be chased by giant hands with eyeballs. Right?
If you scuff your knuckle, that hurts as well. If you can bang your knuckle.
No, giant hands with eyeballs on the back of them. Things that, you know, just these weird tentacled mouth things. Stack of bodies.
Very Lovecraftian.
It's very Lovecraftian, and it's also very traditional Japanese folklore as well. And it does.
So like yokai and that sort of stuff. And
there are a lot of things that are nods to traditional Japanese folklore in this game. And it's kind of, what if Spirited Away was actually a horror?
What do you mean, what if? A bloody mum and dad are turned into pigs? That's pretty bad.
Yeah, but there's not really that much blood in the game. In the movie, is there? Now, what if Ghibli took Spirited Away and remade it as an actual horror? So, because the art style in this, it's a very cute art style, which is really at odds to the blood and the, you know, and the atmosphere and the horror. It does have a couple of jump scares every now and then, but generally it's the atmosphere that gets you, it's the gameplay that gets you. And the gameplay, yes, it's a little bit repetitive, but I'll tell you something, it more than makes up for it with the atmosphere. This has got the same kind of atmosphere, or a similar atmosphere to Silent Hill 2. Right.
It sounds very,
sorry?
It sounds very Clock Tower-y, to be honest, Rob.
It's not Clock Tower-y, unless you're talking about Clock Tower 1 and 2. Silent Hill 1 and 2, I should say. It's got an atmosphere similar to those two games where you can just see things just at the edge of the screen, but you can't make out what they are. And all you've got is the sound of your heartbeat to tell you if you're close to something or not, right?
Yeah.
And you have to, at certain points of the game, after a certain point of the game, you'll get a lantern, which helps you, but that only helps you see. That doesn't stop a lot of the stuff that will ultimately come chasing you, right?
I follow you, yeah.
And you have to keep going. You have to find your sister. And eventually, you know, you start realizing that there is something very wrong with the town. The question is raised, why does the town have so many spirits? You know, what's wrong with this town? And you do learn what's wrong with the town as the game progresses. And, you know, and it's up to you to save your sister. That's all I'm going to say about that. Like I said, the gameplay is quite repetitive and very simple. But that's not a detriment to this game as a whole. That's actually a merit. If they'd tried to overcomplicate the game by adding, you know, combat mechanics or something like that, this would not have worked. This would have been just another generic JRPG horror game type thing, right? Or J-horror type game. The fact that they forewent the combat mechanics in favor of having no combat makes it more like Haunting Ground or the new Resident Evil game that's supposed to be coming out where combat is very limited, right?
Terrible as well, the new Final Fantasy, Resident Evil, sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, that adds an immediacy to the game because if you can't fight a monster, all you can do is run away, right? And if you're running away, where do you run to? Within the town's environments, you can get turned around real quick and end up at the same place you started at, because that happened to me a couple of times, right? Do you remember back when we were playing Zombicide, Rob?
Yeah.
And you went gallivanting off and ended up trapped in a corner surrounded by zombies?
Well, I was having fun. I was destroying zombies and everything.
Yeah. Now, imagine your character was a little girl, and instead of being able to fight the zombies, you had to weave your way through the zombie horde without getting caught.
Well, you see, I was a little girl, I wouldn't have been in that situation, because in Zombicide it was dual wielding a chainsaw and an axe, so... Yeah.
But you understand what I mean, you know?
Yeah.
Making your way through a horde of zombies, or a horde of undead, right, or a horde of yokai and evil spirits, without getting captured by one of them, and it's very, very tricky, right? It is very tricky, it requires a lot of control. One slip and you're caught, right? One slip and you're dead, it's game over. And so that's where it becomes really tense, you know, because you have to keep pushing forward. You have to find your sister. That's the prime thing that you have to do. And since you're a little girl, because it never really says if the sister is the only family, but the assumption is there that, you know, all the sisters have is each other. So that's why she keeps pushing forward to find her older sister. This is one of those rare PS Vita games that makes it worth having a PS Vita, right? Is one of those rare Japanese games that makes me happy that I play Japanese games. This is actually one of those rare games, one of those rare horror games, that reminds me of why I like horror games. Yomiwari Night Alone. Cute graphics, simple controls, slightly repetitive gameplay, but that's nothing to worry about because the atmosphere and the story really deliver in this. And yes, there are talking heads in this, but this is one of those games where I will happily forgive the talking heads for giving me such a wonderful game.
Yeah, that's understandable.
This is easily one of the best Japanese games on the Vita.
So what's that one called?
Yomiwari Night Alone.
Yeah.
Very atmospheric. Okay. Very Ghibli in its art style.
Can I just say one thing? I said that the new Resident Evil looks terrible. Can I just qualify that?
Yeah.
Resident Evil, for me, always led the crowd. I was led the crowd of what a horror game should be for a long, long time. And then they fell out of favour and became action games. And with the rise of indie games, indie horrors, and especially like Soma or Outlast or stuff like that, you know.
Well, it was around the PS2 era when Resident Evil took its foot off the gas.
But my point is, Resident Evil is now copying off the popular kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's playing catch-up.
It's not doing its own thing. It's just, oh, that's popular. I'll do that too. And that's I don't want to justify that by putting money into it and spending money on it. Oh no.
Well, I mean,
don't like that.
If you look at something like Silent Hill, right? Silent Hill was the game for me that defined horror in video games. The
original, agreed, but you know, Resident Evil was number two always.
Yeah. No,
Silent Hill didn't take its foot off the gas though. It just
No, Silent Hill didn't take its foot off the gas. Instead, Silent Hill got drunk at the wheel. That's what happened.
It's been 4.
He's been driving for too long. And
yeah, it's had a few drinks, maybe one too many Vicodin, and it ended up somewhere where it really had no business being. That's what happened with Silent Hill. But
that's just my feelings on Resident Evil 7 and why I think it's not going to be the savior of the franchise that people are claiming it as.
No, because they said that about 5 and 6 already.
Yeah.
They said exactly the same thing about 5 and 6. For Resident Evil to be saved, what needs to happen with Resident Evil, right? And this is gonna sound awful because I'm not the biggest fan of them, and they've gone on far too long. But for Resident Evil to be saved, right, it needs to go down the route. It needs to look at what the movies are doing.
They're terrible, Rob. They're even worse than the games.
No. That's what I'm talking about. It needs to look at what the movies are doing, because what the movies are doing are the same thing that the games are doing. You're copying off other things, right?
Yeah.
And it's only by looking at the movies that they might see that what they're doing is ruining the game by copying off other things. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of being original and creative. And I'm glad that the movies are ending. I'm glad that the entire franchise, movie franchise is ending.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we'll leave it on that bombshell, though, because, yeah, it could get even more ranty and,
Happy thoughts. Yomawari Night Alone is a fantastically simple, very atmospheric game to play. It's very cute graphics, but it's a horror. And that idiosyncratic nature really adds to the atmosphere. The fact that you can't fight back against these yokai, these spirits, these demons, really adds to the atmosphere. It's right. After playing Haunting Ground on the PS2 years ago, I thought, okay, this is an interesting angle to approach horror games from. The fact that you can't fight back, all you can do is run and hide, right? And I'm really glad that there is a video game now that proves what I was saying for all this time is actually a thing. You don't need to fight back in a horror video game. All you need to do is run.
Yeah. Okay. That's all we have time for, though.
Yep, that's it.
So, covered today, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, Titanfall 2.
I've covered World Rally Championship and Battlefield 1.
And I had the pleasure of The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel 2, because the Japanese like their long names, and Yomawari, Night Alone, proving that the Japanese can also do short names.
Yes. We have been Press X as part of the Geek Show podcast network. Find us on social media by searching for us on either Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr or Mal, My Anime List.
Yes.
Included. We have a group and a profile in there. But to support us, there are a multitude of ways to do it. You can head on to iTunes or whatever podcast provider you use and share it with your friends. Similarly, you can give us a star rating or a little written review on iTunes. That also helps with exposure. But if you want to wear something on your body, on your skin flesh, to show your support, head over to the website at thegeekshow.co.uk, and there is a tab called The Geek Shop.
Yes.
Click on that. It'll take you to our shop, and we have some wares on there, which we will be in the process of updating in due course. But if you want to get the jump in and be a filthy biscuit eater or other things, head over there and peruse our selection. But until next time, we've been Press X on the Geek Show. Next week, we'll be back with the Geek Show on the Geek Show, and I assume it'll be a continuation of our adventure special.
Yes.
Yes.
until then, though, I've been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I've been Rob.
Thank you for listening. Now let us stop talking because my throat's hurting. Bye-bye.
Bye.